verses is from Romans 7 and verse 7. It says, "What shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Nay, I had not known sin, but by the law, for I had not known lust, except the law had said, thou shalt not covet." My first question is this: how did the Jews come to know sin under the old law?
Well, it's just what the way Paul explained it. He said, when I realized I'm guilty of coveting, I violated the 10th of the Ten Commandments. So he had a knowledge of sin from reading that command. And now I've committed a sin. I violated the 10th of the Ten Commandments. What am I going to do, he said. And he was became a miserable person. But then the victory, you know, at the end is through Jesus Christ. I think that's what I'd say.
My other question is this. You know, James says, was not Abraham our father justified by works? Can you explain that?
Well, the works of faith. And it's interesting. In Romans there in the 4th chapter, when he talked about Abraham wasn't justified by the works of the flesh. And then he went on down and he criticized the Judaizing teachers. You know, we use this verse, and we should, that we should walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham. And it makes a beautiful lesson. But, you know, we're not told exactly when Abraham was justified, but Paul gave a little exception. Not an exception, but he said this, that we should walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had before he was circumcised. He was justified before he was circumcised. So the works of faith, he's telling those Judaizing teachers, cannot include circumcision. If you did, you'd have to kick Abraham out.
So his works of works that he committed were actually works of faith.
Yep.
Okay.
He was justified on the basis of works of faith. He showed mighty faith in God when God, no matter how great a matter he suggested he do, he did it. He didn't question it. And we can learn it pays to obey God. You know, he obeyed it, said. But God didn't consider him righteous, as we've hammered on, because of anything he did as a person. His own goodness, his own works. No, he was a good man, but that's not what justified him.
No works saved him. It's just that he sacrificed his only son, Isaac.
Yeah.
And that was a work of faith.
That's, yeah, the example we would all think of. Yes, that's true.
Thank you, dear.
Yep. These works of the flesh that he was did, of course, was, what we know. He was rich. He had a standing army. He did good things for people.
Brother Jerry, in Romans 3, verse 27, where is boasting then? It is excluded by what law? Of works? No, but by the law of faith. Now, you said, if I understand you correctly, the law, what law excludes boasting in verse 27 is the law of Moses.
Yes, in this case, yeah.
All right, when you get to chapter 4, it looks to me like he's going to illustrate what he meant in verse 27. So he says, "What then shall we say that Abraham our father has found according to the flesh? For Abraham was justified by, if Abraham were justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God." Now, in chapter 3, verse 27, what law excludes boasting of works? No. Well, if that's the Old Testament law, looks like he's illustrating what he just said now in chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. But you say that's not the law of Moses, that's the law of the flesh.
I think so. And I'll tell you why, George. Excuse me, you finished.
Well, what I'm saying, I don't understand how you're switching from the law of Moses in chapter 3, verse 27, and then we get to chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. He's illustrating what he meant in verse 27 of chapter 3. And I don't see how you're switching from the law of Moses now to a law of the flesh. I'm just not seeing the connection there.
I thought about what you said. It would seem like it's getting off the subject. But when you think about Abraham, when he lived, he didn't live under the law for one thing. And so you have to, he said, what did Abraham, according to the flesh, achieve? I can't see how he's talking about something that a lot of people were doing, but he didn't do, I did. He wasn't even privy concerning circumcision for after this event. So I just never could see how that, what did he achieve according to the flesh, could refer to a work of the law of Moses. It just, I couldn't make it match up in my mind. But even if it's correct, we still, this is still correct too. In other words, we can't do anything that would make God owe us anything when it comes to justification. But we've got to always keep this in some kind of context, the works. You might say, but I know if you hang on to this according to the flesh, that it will hold up. Just every time you read after, what did Abraham achieve according to the flesh? Then every time you read about Abraham in the next clauses and verses, just add this into it. It modifies every one of those statements, whatever. If it, I don't see how it could say, what did Abraham achieve according to circumcision? For if Abraham were justified by works according to the flesh, in other words, he hath whereof to glory, but not before God. And Abraham believed God, and so on. Now to him that works according to the flesh, it is not reckoned of grace. You could be right, but I feel personally more comfortable just making it his own works.
Jerry, I enjoyed your talk, and I think you're right for where you began in the first place, and that is you cannot really make anything in the book of Romans about whether or not the word law is articular, has the article, or anarthrous, doesn't have the article. You can't tell if it's the law of Moses by that fact alone. You can't tell if it's the moral law by that fact alone. The moral law sometimes has the article. The law of Moses sometimes doesn't have the article, and vice versa. I think you're exactly right about that. I think a passage that helps prove what I think you're trying to prove here, what you've been saying, is in Galatians 3:21. Paul said, if righteousness could have come by law, it would have come by the law, meaning Moses' law. Now the point, in that case, the article is referring to Moses' law. What he's saying is, it's not in the province of law to forgive sins. Law can tell you what's right, it can tell you what's wrong, it can tell you what the penalty is, but when you do wrong and break the law, law cannot forgive you. Whether it's Moses' law, the moral law, no law can forgive sins. And so the basis of justification for sinners, which we all are, cannot be law. It's not Moses' law, and if it would have been any law, it would have been Moses' law. That's what he's saying right there. And so back in Romans 3:31, kind of getting to what you and George were talking about, there may be a difference without a real significant difference here between the two of you. He says, do we make void the law through faith? Certainly not. On the contrary, we establish law. What Paul is saying is that when the principle of justification is based upon faith in Jesus Christ, or it's based upon the grace of God which comes through faith in Jesus Christ, he's saying that we have taken away the stigma of law, because the stigma of law was that always condemned everybody. If you broke it, it condemned you. And now law is established because the law of faith, the law of Christ, which is in that same context right there, the law of faith, is able to establish these boundaries. and give you regulations by which you must live your life, point out your sin, but justification, whether it's your initial justification by being saved by obeying the gospel, or your justification as a Christian who has sinned and you repent and pray and ask God to forgive you, your justification comes on the basis of grace through faith. But that doesn't change the fact that the law has to regulate your life, the Christian law. And so whether law has an article or not is not important. What he's saying is law can't forgive sins. Sins are forgiven through Jesus Christ. But the New Testament is also a system of law, which I think is one of the points you were making up there.
Jerry, I'd like to make a comment about the passage, the grace of Christ that appeared unto all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust. Obviously, in that verse, the grace of Christ teaches. It appears to all men. If we were saved by grace alone, all men obviously would be saved. But we have the grace of Christ manifested in the gospel, and when we hear it and believe it and obey it, we're saved. Now, in Galatians 1, Paul said, I marvel that you're so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel. Another gospel is put in apposition to the grace of Christ. The grace of Christ teaches us through the gospel. Another gospel teaches us something that's wrong. And so we receive the grace of Christ through the gospel, through the fact that Jesus came and died for our sins. And through hearing it and believing and obeying it, we're saved by grace.
Brother Jerry, I've got an article here that was written in the Christian Expositor. It's called Breaking the Alabaster Vial. And this is the last paragraph of that article. It says, sometimes showing love involves more than obeying commands. Often brethren quote John 14:15 to define love. Love is keeping Jesus' commands. Certainly that is one way of expressing love to God, but is our love confined to that? In Mary's case, this is Mary that broke the alabaster box and anointed Jesus' feet. In Mary's case, where is the command, example, or necessary inference that she should perform such an act? Did Jesus command Mary to anoint his head and feet for burial? Did Mary obey a command by anointing Jesus with expensive perfume? And he goes on. And he says, some today would likely condemn Mary by questioning where she got authority to do such a thing. The silence of the scriptures did not forbid Mary's anointing Jesus. So in other words, silence doesn't forbid, silence permits. She didn't have any authority, but the Lord went ahead and accepted something she did that was unauthorized because she's doing it out of love. All right, he goes on. He says, Paul says regarding the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5, against such there is no law. When we get to the point that we demand everyone expresses his love for Christ in the exact same ways and degrees, we've become Pharisaical. Now, this is what one of our preachers wrote, and he's saying as long as your attitude is an attitude of love, it doesn't matter whether you have authorization or not for the actions you're performing as long as that action being performed is an expression of love. And he's quoting Galatians 5, against such there is no law. And so I would like for you to comment on that usage of Galatians chapter 5. You mentioned it during your talk, but now I'm not clear on what you're saying, but this brother, I don't think you would agree with this brother that as long as your motive was love, there is nothing against that. And I don't believe that's the truth. I don't believe you agree with that, but I would like to hear your comments about Galatians 5, there against such there is no law.
Well, I don't know where she violated the law. He's just writing a bunch of words. And people grab up these words and read them, think, well, that's great. What's the point? She didn't violate a law. She didn't do anything against the elders, the Lord, the apostles. What is the point? I don't know what they're trying to drive at, except we are not under laws, is about all I got out of it. And if we're not under law in that case, we're not under law in this case. I know where this leads, you know, it's a chain reaction. I don't see anything to what the man said myself. In fact, I think he was trying to mislead. I don't feel good about those kind of statements. She didn't violate a command, a law, override the man, or anything else that I could see.
You mentioned the word law was used, I think you said 30, maybe two times in Galatians. Do you find the majority of the time the word law is used in Galatians is the law of Moses? Not every time, but would you think majority?
More than the other way. But no, well, I would say, now say that, is the word law used more
in Galatians
than it would to refer?
The word law, the word law is used in the book of Galatians, most of the time referring to the law of Moses.
Definitely.
So anytime there's a contrast between law and grace, you know, it's law of Moses that you're talking about.
Yep.
When you're talking about you're saved by grace, it's the grace and truth that Jared talked about that came by Jesus. You know, there's two passages, and there probably are more, but there are the two passages that are definitely not law of Moses. At least I don't think so, unless someone I can stand to be corrected. The passage you and George were just talking about, Galatians 5 and 22, against such there is no law. Would you consider that more like a moral law?
Well, it's really just a figure of speech. You know, why would you want to restrict it? He's not really teaching a big lesson on the law.
Right. He lists the fruits of the Spirit and just said, this fruit of the Spirit, there's no law anywhere, any place, I would assume, that would contradict that. And the second place is Galatians 6 and 2 that clearly says, bear one another's burden and so fulfill the law of Christ.
Yeah.
Other than those two, I have said all other passages referred to the law of Moses, but maybe I need to refrain from saying all and just saying most of the passages left in Galatians is the law of Moses.
Those are the only two I can think of that don't refer to the law of Moses.
Because in this grace law controversy, that becomes a big issue in the book of Galatians and obviously Romans. Thank you.
Maybe I'm missing the point on this Galatians 5:23, but I think he's just saying there's no law against doing the right thing if y'all chance to want to do that. I really think that's all he's saying. There's no law against showing love or having the spirit of peace and joy. There's no law against that stuff. You can do it freely. However, there are laws regulating how we are to display our love. And depends on the context. Is the context marriage? Is the context the church? Is the context your neighbor? There's all kinds of laws that regulate how you display love, but there's no law against displaying love. I mean, showing love or doing an act of love. The question is, what are the laws that regulate whether something is an act of love? I think that's all he's saying there. He's not saying there's no regulations like this article was saying. He's not saying there's no regulations, that you can just call anything you want to love. He's not saying that.
I think my comment would be more in line with what George is commenting on. When the scriptures share and show to us when we have opportunity to do good to all men. I think that would show more in favor of an opportunity that Mary had to do good, not being authorized or permission to do it. Because if it was that we have to have permission to do every good deed, then we would have to search and find out, is it authorized or permissible for me to do that? So I think it's like the Good Samaritan. He didn't necessarily have instructions from the law, did he, to help that person that was wounded?
Yeah.
It was a time to do a good deed, I think.
With that type of logic, it'd be no ending. You could just go on and talk about anything you wanted to.
Jerry, the book of Romans, Romans 4 and 3, says Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. Then James says in the book of James, this is James 4, James 2 and 21, was not Abraham our father justified by works? What was the point? I mean, it evidently, maybe, does it refer to the same occasion?
No, you mean Romans 3 and James 2 referred to the same. Well,
right. One says he was justified by works, and the other says that he was believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness.
Well, when you read the entire text, when he's talking about those works of faith, and he went ahead and said, "You can see we are not justified by faith only," and so on. I think we just have to, if we compare these texts, it's not really a complete thought. In other words, Paul, when he wrote, he suggested things that people readily understood already. And I don't see...
Well, the point, as I see it, is they say that Paul and James contradict each other.
Yeah, I know.
But yet they refer to the same incident.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Luther got it started, and to the point he couldn't explain it, so he just said, well, James wasn't inspired. That's one way to just kick the Bible out. But
I just wanted to, you know, respond to this idea of having to have authority for everything we do. We have to have authority for every single thing we do. And if we don't have authorization, we better not be doing it. And that Good Samaritan had authorization for what he did. The authorization that Jesus said he had was love your neighbor as yourself. And that was the very authorization that he was illustrating. And so he had authorization for that. And Mary had authorization for what she did when she anointed the feet of Jesus. But the point that I was trying to ask about from this article that I was reading, which I feel like Alan answered it well, is that brethren, people are saying anything I want to do, as long as it's based on an attitude or motive of love, is acceptable, even if the action itself is unauthorized, because against such there is no law. They're quoting that passage in Galatians chapter 5. So as long as I label it as an act of love, doesn't matter what I'm doing, there's no law against it. But that's a misusage of that passage, and we do have to have authorization for everything we do. And there was authorization by Mary and by the Good Samaritan.
Well, what he said in Galatians, any reader that reads that knows these are so great that what can you say, really? It's just a figure of speech. You can't make a big case out of it. And then on authorization, in the sense you're using it, I don't believe you're right. We don't have to have authorization to come here or leave or eat or sleep. It's just, now there's principles that we have to have authorization for, or there are rules against, but just to talk about everything you want to talk about and say, did he get authorization? I don't think the Bible works like that myself. It may for you, but it doesn't for me.
You know, this is not my talk, and I don't want to dominate the time here, but this is going on record, and it'll be around for years to come. But we do need authorization to be together here. This is a permission. We don't have to be here. We are permitted to assemble. We have to have authorization to assemble, but people are thinking we have to have explicit authorization. There is implicit authorization. We have to have at least that. to be able to assemble and conduct assemblies of the church. And so we have authorization to be here right now. And we have to conduct ourselves according to the rules of assemblies, 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Everything that we're doing has to be authorized. So I disagree that we don't need authorization for everything. We do. It doesn't have to be explicit authorization, but we need at least implicit authorization for everything.
Thank you, Jerry. I just wanted to say something about Brother Johnny's question. I think it's an excellent question and needs to be dealt with. Even if I can't answer it, somebody else needs to stand up and answer it. Abraham was justified by faith because he believed God. And I think a simple point is this. When God told Abraham that he would be a father of many nations, he believed that. And that justified him. In James's case, Abraham was justified by works. And that justification came when he offered up Isaac on the altar. He was obedient. So in the first case, God didn't give a command. He gave a promise. So James was talking about a work. Paul was talking about a promise. So we can't obey a promise. We can only believe it. And I think that's the difference between the two. And they don't contradict each other.
Abraham was justified on the basis of his faith. No, enough has been said. Thank you.